Welcome to the Indianness podcast. We bring you inspiring stories from leaders with Indian roots across business, healthcare, education, politics, and more. Hear how they broke barriers and are shaping the future one bold step at a time. Ram Sarin is a visionary tech pioneer and the driving force behind Tuka Group, a company that has revolutionized the apparel industry with breakthrough CAD and CAM 3D fashion technology. Founder and CEO since 1995, Sarin has transformed traditional garment design and manufacturing through disruptive innovation, democratizing digital pattern making, virtual sampling, and end-to-end fashion tech solutions used by brands and manufacturers around the world.
This is the Indianness podcast, stories of success from leaders and changemakers of Indian origin. Why have Indians achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together. And every story is unique. And today we have a very unique story with us. On today's episode of Indianness, I'm delighted to welcome a true game changer in the global fashion industry, Ram Sarin. Born and raised in India in a family of garmentos, Ram's early weekend chore was to escort buyers and designers from the US and Europe to see the Taj Mahal, an eight-hour journey trip that became his real-world classroom on how the fashion industry really works. In 1974, armed with a degree in mechanical engineering and big dreams, he moved to North America and started at the Absolute Pattern, washing dishes for $2 an hour, before rising to earn lots of money in the fashion business. But a sudden cardiac arrest at 45 on a dentist chair became a defining wake-up call for him, a second chance that pushed him to leave corporate America and build something on his own. In 1995, he formed Tuka Tech, the fashion technology company that has helped transform pattern making from paper to digital screens. For over half a century, Ram has been described with one word, disruptive. Widely regarded as one of the top apparel production specialists in the world and even recognized among the most influential figures in California's garment industry, earning an invitation to the White House. Ram's journey from Agra weekends and immigrant hustle to global technology leadership is exactly the kind of story we celebrate on Indianness: resilience, reinvention, and giving back. Ram, welcome to the Indianness podcast.
Thank you so much, Sanjay, and it's a real pleasure to share few of my challenges and my upbringing that has helped me to shape my life. And I'm very proud to say I love India. I owe a great deal to India. The education that they gave me at such a nominal cost is an example why the Indians do better, the values that we grow up with. Believe it or not, when you're young, you don't care. You don't listen to your parents. But you know what? No matter what, I realize over the years, that thing sits there in the back. Every time the principal sent me home with an expulsion note, it said, too disruptive. I get bored. I want to do something new, something different. And I get it. What they're trying to tell me in 8 hours, I got it in 2 hours. Now, get on with it, okay? And that was not good for the rest of the class, I guess. I'm here for a purpose. You know, Gandhi used to say, no matter what you do, you're going to die. But it's very important that while you live, do something worthwhile. And that shaped me to where I am today. But that awakening did not happen till my cardiac arrest. Before that, I was an asshole. I'm not kidding about that. I rose from this to that in a very short time, 6 years. And I can understand the rock stars and all these movie people who get very early successes, they go crazy. Result orientation is good, but there's always another way of getting it done. I'm very impatient. During my hospital stay at the cardiac arrest, on a dentist chair, they gave me nitrous oxide and went to attend another patient and forgot about me. The next thing you know is the nitrous oxide, the laughing gas. So much of it went in that my blood pressure dropped and my heart stopped. Thank God they revived me. While they were taking me in the, I remember, ambulance, I see a light, a very bright light, and then I see dark, and then I see light, and then I see dark. Then I see from the corner of my eyes, I'm going through a tunnel. That was the effect of some bad memory of some television show that I'd watched, What Happens After You're Dead. I have no idea where my courage or voice came out. I said, I can't be dead. I'm only 45 years old. Call my wife. I gave the number. And all of a sudden I hear, he's all right. He's all right. And then I look down and there's this black face, eyes wide open and huffing. And I thought, I'm really dead now. But what was happening, I was in a gurney going through the hallway. There were tube lights in the hallway. The light would, because I was groggy, the light would come on, the light would go off, light would go on. Okay, I'm seeing the light. From the side of the sink, I see that I'm going the hallway, but it looks like a tunnel. And then I see down on my body, there's this black Sri Lankan nurse who was sitting there trying to revive my heart. And that was the good experience in a way. It was a life-changing thing. You realized it is all over in a minute, if need be. So lying down, I start taking the inventory of my life. What have I done? Who have I wronged? Was there any need for that? I made a list of all the people. In the following 6 months, I called or visited every one of them, not because they asked me, but I wanted to apologize for my misbehavior. That gave me a little bit of peace, so to speak. But it was an inner thing. You don't learn in a school, college, but it's a combination of a lot of things. Your upbringing, your religion, your philosophy. You know, I'm a very proud Hindu. My two children, born in Canada, both have Indian names. My name is Ram Sareen. Phonetically, it is pronounced R-A-M, but in America, it is Ram. I've spent half my life teaching people Ram. My parents gave me a name. They really thought what would be the appropriate identity for me. Last thing I want you to do is change it. No. I have so many people working in our company who have very difficult names. And they try to change it a little bit to facilitate others. And I make them sit down. I say, why do you think you do that? If your name is this, you need to teach people how to pronounce it. Don't insult your parents. Those are the things that I think shapes the people.
Ram, you talked about parents. And in this show, we talk a lot about parents because especially this is a show about Indianness, where parents play a big role as far as Indianness culture or the spirit is concerned. Where were you born? And tell us, our audience, just very briefly a little bit about your parents. What were they doing and just what was the environment like?
I'm the fifth or the final addition to my family. I was born in Delhi. My father worked for Indian Railways. My father and I had a 42-year difference. So it was almost like a 2 generations gap. I was very close to him. And being the youngest of the five, I was pampered a lot. Honestly, I was not very social with families. I was growing up in a hippie era. I was 12 years old when I saw Beatles first time, and I wanted to be a drum player. Drum set was a 7,000 rupees. Here I am stuck that I want to buy the drums. So 2 years, I drove my family crazy by buying a drumsticks and playing on the plates and whatever tables, because we have all family is mechanical engineers, all of us. We had a lot of drafting boards. I would use that as a bass drum for me. Finally, my oldest brother said, okay, you know what? That's not a toy, but I'm going to get you this if you pass. So he took me to in New Delhi. There was a place called Bhogo, musical instrument. He took me there. There was all kind of instruments there. I'd never sat on a drum set. I sat on there and I started just beating the drums. Long story short, my brother bought me that. We formed a band. And my parents told me, my father from the old school, that if I ever find out that you're taking money for this, you are out of the house. Why? Because we hire musicians. In Indian words, they said, ye marasiyon ka kaam hai. Hum marasi nahin hai. And we used to practice all the time. We used to go and perform for different associations, clubs, and so on. And we took 75 rupees to cover the taxi fare for all the instruments too, and so on. But that's about it. And one day, one of our guys was a smart ass. When the show was finished, we were five of us in the band. He gives everyone 100 rupees three times. So 300 rupees per person. Now you can imagine at 14-year-old, in those days, you could spend 50 rupees if you like in a month. My allowance was 50. Food came from home, the lunches, the driver dropped you. Where are you going to spend? Coca-Cola was 25 cents. Then the second one, another 300. Third one, another 300. What are you doing, Johnny? Well, they want to pay. So I opened an account in General Post Office. That's the only place you could park your money as a child. It was a savings account with a passbook and a 4% interest. I remember that. But during my engineering, my father's dream was to have all his sons mechanical engineers. And the other three were already mechanical engineers. My oldest brother was already a professor in IIT. He had written books that we were studying in my engineering and so on. So I said, you know, I can't hack it. My father got me a job. And in those days, if you could get a job for 300 rupees as a mechanical engineer, this is 1972, you were a lucky man because the unemployment rate was 24% at that time. And he got me a job for 700 rupees in R&D. So I go there. My mother put the tikka and barfi or whatever, the sweets. And okay, you're going first day to work. I go there at lunchtime. I'm trying to wash my hands. I can't get the grease out. It's black because in the R&D. So I walked in my own. I said, is that what I want to do for the rest of my life? No. I didn't like what I was doing. So I walked into the supervisor's office. I said, I like to resign. First day, 6 hours later. And that guy knew that I have come in from Mr. Harinanda's whatever. So he got scared. He said, well, what happened, sir? I said, no, I don't like the job. I come back home. My mother is worried. 2 o'clock, I'm home. What happened? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay, mom. What happened? I said, I quit. She went ballistic. What do you mean you quit? Nobody quits jobs. Wait till your father comes home because he's going to be very upset, whatever. At 6 o'clock, I hear my mother talking to my father downstairs. I come down running and I talk to my dad. I said, Dad, don't listen to her. I'm going to talk to you. What have you been telling us all our life? Do whatever you like, but you must like. You have romance with what you do. You have passion with what you do, and the results will come out automatically. He said, yes. I said, I didn't like what I was doing. Fair. What do you want to do? I don't know. 2 days go by. Every morning he said, so have you decided? I said, no, you're going to have to make a stand. So, okay, I'm going to go in the fashion business. But I said, okay, come to the factory from tomorrow morning. I said, I don't want to work for you. I was a rebel all my life. I said, I want to work for myself. okay, suit yourself, but do whatever you like. I go, yeah, sure. I ended up going to my father's competition. Yeah. This is a funny, that's when the child in the cradle, I was not a nice person, okay, or different person. And I went there and I asked the guy, I won't tell you the name of the companies because it's not fair. We were one of the largest exporters at that time, with a couple of thousand people. And here I'm going there, and the guy knew who I was. And I said, Uncle, I've started my own business. Well, I've come here to get some orders. So he said, well, we're very different from your father's business because we used to hire what they call fabricators. We mean outside contractors. They pick up the fabric, the patterns, they cut and sew, and they deliver. So he said, we are very different from your father's business. We are, we do what we call full package. So people come in, they bid. There's a 100 rupees tender fee. And then whose tender is passed, they get the contract. But they supply us the complete garment. It's wonderful. That's a better idea. Tell me, what are you going to open the tender for today? This is at 2 o'clock. We're having tea. And because he's respectful because of my family background. So he said, well, he called his assistant. He said, well, which are we opening today? So he brought 5 garments. I looked at one. I said, can I fill the tender for this one? He said, yeah. So he gave me a tender form. I took 100 rupees. I put that in there. In about 30 seconds, I had filled the tender and gave it to him. Now, I had no business. I had no registration. I had no office. I had nothing. I'd just come from my home. But my girlfriend had, her father was also a very influential man in my life who always told me, be independent. You can do it. Because he was a self-made billionaire, okay? He was an inspiration. So I gave their address, their phone number, because they had a commercial property in the front, in the back was a house and so on. And I've just made up a name. Okay. Filled in the thing. He's very surprised that I've done it in 10 minutes. So I sealed it, put the money and gave it to him. So he said later, listen, beta, people study the garment. They do the costings. Nobody does like this. I said, Uncle, I told you, I'm going to take the order from you today. Very intrigued. It's 4 o'clock by now. He says to him, he said, what time do we open? He said, 5 o'clock. He said, is anybody else coming? He said, no. Let's open it now. Bring Mr. Serene's tender first. Because he's very intrigued. He gets the envelope, opens it up, reads it, and on the price it said, in parentheses, 50 paisa. He said, what is this? I said, whatever is your lowest tender, mine is 50 paisa less. He literally fell off the chair laughing his head off. He said, yaar, I have been in business so many years. I've never seen. I said, Uncle, I told you I'm going to take the order today. 16 rupees, 75 paisa was the lowest tender. So 16.25, I said, yes, sir. 2,800 blouses. Put the order in there. I have nothing in my back except the order. And I'm really flying. I go to my now father-in-law, his house, and Uncle, my first order. I took the liberty of doing that. No, beta, that's fine. We're okay. Next day, I knew there's a guy who comes from Tirupur, brings the fabric, the cotton crepe. I knew he had a place in Rajendranagar. So between my girlfriend and I, in the cars, we are out there. The guy says, okay, I have this fabric in stock. This is the amount of money. I didn't know how to cost it. I gave him the blouse. Tell me how many yards do I need for 2,800 blouses. He gave me the number. When can I have it? Give me the money. That same afternoon, I went to my account, got the money, gave it to him. And the journey started for my first business, so to speak. My girlfriend and I, we were carrying the rolls of materials and so on in our automobiles and using her living room as my storage area, and then running into Shahdara and Kishan Nagar and Lodi Colony and all the places for the contractors to cut and sew and embroider. I used to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning. I used to come back at midnight, 7 days a week. But I delivered 2 days early, 12 extra blouses. Two of them got rejected. All of them got approved. I got paid. And my credibility had become very clear that they understood I will deliver on time. I will deliver good quality and good product. So they let me do my way. At 85,000 rupees sitting in the bank as my profit, that sure did beat 700 rupees a month job. In other words, I was a lakhpati at age 21, 22. Another family member decided, well, maybe we should go a little bigger, and on. So I left that to start exporting ourselves directly and get 34% incentive from the government and so on. A long, long story short, we did a very good job. The person threw me out of his business. We have no contract. I got nothing paid. But that became friction in the family. I'm very stubborn. I wouldn't touch his feet. If he'll come in, I'll just walk out. And that became, I'm not going to come, the family rift. In those days, it was very, very, very difficult to move out of the house. That would be a disgrace in the family. In the meantime, I had done something entirely different. I went back in the mechanical engineering side. I went in and asked my older brother, what are the products he was working for, Daily Electric Supply Undertaking? He knew what parts were being imported and so on. So show me what it is and let me see. I don't want to do what everybody else is doing. So I started a import substitution program. First item I had was a high temperature, high pressure steam valve. I got that. I sourced the materials. I had no factory. I was in Turkman Gate. I was in Jama Masjid. I was in various shops getting one part made, one part made, one part made, and so on. And then I assembled it together, took it to the NPL, got it tested, got it approved, da da da. Next thing you know is I got orders after orders after orders coming in from the government of India, right? And so I'm running around. I'm a one-man show, but I was really very vocal with the government that why are you not doing this thing for all the engineers? There is so much need for that and so on. They gave me two plots in Okhla, 2 acres each, to set up a factory. 10 lakh rupees, Bank of India, to start a factory. And order the machines and so on. I had orders all the way to Dhanbad from all different places and so on. I had made 3 other products also, so, you know, voltage regulator and all kind of things. Wanted to do something different than what everybody else was doing, okay? And one day I had a big rift in the family. So I called my eldest brother who was living in Canada at that time. I said, bhai, I can't take it. He said, just come to me, okay? That was it. I'm going to return the money. I'm going to give the plots back to the government. My brothers and everybody saying, why? No, I'm done. I'm never coming back to this country. Remember, I'm 24 years old by this time. I had enough money that I made. I said, fuck it. I'm out. I come in. $8 was allowed at that time. I think I got in black about $100 that they could give me. They said, do you take more than that? You get caught. They're going to put you in the jail. So I got $100 with me. By the time I ended up here in Canada, I had $24 American. At that time, American dollar was much weaker. So it was 23 something Canadian dollars, okay? That was the start of my life. I never worked for anybody. I didn't even know how to really put my shoes on properly or tie the shoes. Pampered. And here I am working as a busboy in a restaurant at $2 an hour, picking dirty plates. If that doesn't humble you, I don't know what else will. I had two choices, put my tail between my legs and go back and say, daddy, I'm sorry, or make it on my own. Very long story short, I worked for several companies. My wife and I, we got married in Canada. We had a She had to go back to law school. She was a lawyer in India with a master's degree, and she's a gold medalist from university. She had a master's degree. She was working for a very prominent lawyer in high court. And I called her. I said, if you love me, come here and marry me. I have no money. I have no job. So she did. And she comes from a very wealthy royal family. We used to joke in college that if you ever went to your daddy and said, Daddy, what is an elephant? He will just buy you an elephant and say, honey, this is an elephant, okay? Then we just joke about with her. And here she left everything for me. Together we started. We had to get started in Canada, in Winnipeg. My first job in a garment company, $700 a month. She went back to law school because they wouldn't recognize her. She was given 1 year exemption because she had practiced 3 years in the Commonwealth. So I didn't have money to pay for the fee. So, but the dean said, the score started 15 days ago. I can put her in. Can you come up? I said, I don't even have the money. I explained him. He said, tell you what, if I took care of the first semester, can you take care of the second semester? How much will that be? $400. When is that? January. I thought that I can do that. So he gave my wife a thing called bursary. Bursary is a scholarship for poor students. Hit me here. That's a motivation, but it hit me here at that time. Here I am in this country qualifying for a poor student. Over the years, constantly we have contributed to the bursary fund in many folds, many, 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 many folds. Because what I received at that time, where $300 was like $3 million to me at the time. So I can't morally repay that. Yeah, I don't know if you understand that sentiment there. We come to Toronto after doing 1 year in Winnipeg. And she has to still finish the law school. So York University was going to give her the degree. And just before her final exams, we found out she's pregnant. We were living in a university apartment. I had a job. Everything was going well. There was a recession. One of the biggest buyers in Canadian retail shut down the entire thing. So 10,000 people went out of work. Companies shut down.